Now, if I was to give you the names of a few tracks, Doo Wah Diddy Diddy, The Mighty Quinn and 54321, you'd instantly recognise them from the 60s performed by Manfred Mann. The group were formed in 1962 and our first guest tonight joined them as a bass player 2 years later, just as 54321 was rising up the charts. He began his career playing in the Roosters alongside another 18-year-old whose name might be familiar to some of you, Eric Clapton. After Manfred Mann disbanded in 1969, he teamed up with ex-John Mayall drummer Huey Flint to form the highly successful McGuinness Flint, a talent-studded group which included the great songwriting team of Gallagher and Lyle. The Manfreds reformed for his 50th birthday at London's Town & Country Club in 1991, and on Saturday at 7:30, his band will be in the city performing their Maximum Rhythm & Blues show at the Guildhall. Please welcome our first guest tonight. It's singer-songwriter, author, musician, record and TV producer, Tom McGuinness.
Hello, Andy.
Good evening, Tom. Thanks for joining us.
What a CV.
Very impressive.
Even I'm impressed.
Now, the original Manfred Mann have been described as an R&B band who only played pop to get into the charts and were more of a thinking man's band, performing R&B music as compelling as the Rolling Stones, but often more sophisticated. That's another mouthful as well. Would you say these are fair descriptions of the band?
I think that's a fair description, though there was also a lot of jazz in it in the early days. Three of the band, Mike Vickers, Mike Hugg, and Manfred Mann, who was the keyboard player, they came from a jazz background. Paul liked jazz, but he was sort of pop, R&B, and me, I was a sort of rock and roller. So it was always a schizophrenic band.
Now, what was it like being part of the music scene during the same period as the Beatles, the Stones, and other bands so synonymous with the decade, which really saw the birth of modern popular music?
It was simply wonderful, Andy. You imagine, you know, you're sort of 20, 21 years old, and you're having hits all over the world, and people are paying you lots of money. Not lots of money by comparison with present-day bands. I remember when Doo Wah Diddy Diddy was number one in America, we were sharing between the five of us 1 cent in every dollar earned. but still, you know, it was a fabulous time. It was a tremendously lively time. After the sort of 50s, suddenly there was full employment. Everyone could sort of take a chance about being an artist, being a writer, being in a band, whatever. Because if it didn't work out, there was always a job to go to. You could go and work for another few months at doing whatever whatever job you could get, and then you could give it another try. And I really can't explain to you why it all burst out then, but it did. There were so many. You could go to the clubs in London and see the Kinks. You could see the Who. You could see the Rolling Stones. You could see the Animals. You see the Spencer Davis Band. You could see Manfred Mann. We were all playing around the clubs at the same time.
It must have been a wonderful period to be involved in the whole recording industry. But this Saturday, you're at the Guildhall in our city. What can we expect from the Maximum Rhythm and Blues show?
Well, it's the Manfreds, which is myself, Mike Hugg, Paul Jones and Mike Darbo from the original 60s band. And Paul Jones and Mike Darbo were the two singers. Paul left the band in 66. Mike Darbo came in and took over, and he was the singer on hits like Semi-Detached Suburban, Mr. James, Ha Ha Said the Clown, The Mighty Quinn. So you'll hear those hits. You'll hear some McGuinness Flint hits like When I'm Dead and Gone. You'll hear some of the hits that Mike Darbo wrote, because Mike wrote Handbags and Glad Rags, which the Stereophonics had a big hit with just quite recently, and he wrote Build Me Up Buttercup. And we've also got two guest singers with us, Maggie Bell, who was part of a band called Stone the Crows back in the late 60s, early 70s, and she then went on to record for Atlantic Records. She had a career a bit like sort of Joss Stone has had, but of course Joss has been much more successful, but Maggie went off to America, recorded for Atlantic Records. She tells these great stories about babysitting for Aretha Franklin. And we've also got Chris Farlow. So we've got two of the great soul singers of that era singing along with us. And Chris, of course, is famous for Out of Time. That was his big hit. Though he also did the very first recording of Handbags and Glad Rags.
That's an impressive lineup, definitely. And your original band developed quite a large, loyal international fan following, which still exists to this day. Do you find a number of these long-term fans turn out regularly for your performances?
Oh, yes. It's quite... I mean, at some gigs in, particular cities and towns, we'll look and we... You know, Paul's very good at remembering names, and Paul will say hello to the front row. You know, hello, John, hello, Mary... Hello, Michael. Hello, Pat. Hello, Francis. You know, yes, a lot of people do come.
Back in the 60s, your music was described, like you said, of an intriguing mix of jazz and R&B with a slightly smoother and jazzier touch than the earlier work of the Stones and the Animals. Has this style survived the test of time, or are the Manfreds now more of a pure rhythm and blues band?
We were never a pure anything, as I said to you. You know, we liked jazz, we liked rock and roll, we liked blues, we liked R&B, we liked soul. We always mixed that up, and we still do. You know, there are, again, it's a band that's sort of pulling in lots of different directions all the time, which gives it its strength. So, you know, there'll be a little bit of jazz in there, there'll be a bit of blues in there, there'll be some R&B in there, there'll be some outright pop in there, there'll be some soul. And that's the way the band always was. We never settled down to a direction, and I fear we're too old to do that now.
Well, I know when I was researching this for this interview, I was pulling up a few of the tracks that the band had recorded. There were the like more instantly recognisable ones, like Do Our Diddy Diddy. But other tracks like blues numbers, which I love the blues, and things like Coochie Coochie Man, and they were fantastic.
Yeah. Yeah. Our very first album, Andy, was called The Five Faces of Manfred Mann, and it included a lot of blues stuff. And that was because the album was really our live act at the time. It included Chuck Berry songs, Bo Diddley songs, Muddy Waters songs, and that formed the core of our act then. Excuse me. And it's interesting how many musicians I've spoken to over the years for whom that album sort of opened doors for them. Tom Robinson said, you know, that was the album he played all the time. And I've been told, though I've never spoken to him, that Bruce Springsteen sort of was really sort of knocked out by that album. And I know he's got a great respect for Paul Jones's voice. You know, in fact, it's really funny. Back in the 70s, I was producing Paul, and Bruce Springsteen sent us a couple of songs, and Paul didn't like them. So we never recorded them. And one of them, The Fever, went on to be a big live number for Bruce Springsteen.
The group's international success was initially with the songs Do Our Diddy Diddy and Shalala. Now, those are really strongly associated with the band, but I don't think most people are aware that they were, in fact, covers from original recordings from the Exciters and the Shirelles, who were both girl bands. So will you be springing any surprises on the audience by reinterpreting any contemporary girl band hits?
I hadn't thought of that. We didn't do... I mean, the Exciters actually were... they were boys and girls, if you see what I mean. It was a sort of, it was a cross-gender band.
A bit like Steps.
Yeah, but a lot better. Actually, that's quite an intriguing idea, Andy. We are doing a few songs by other people that we've done a couple of albums in recent years, which have been treated with studied indifference by the record business. But we've done a couple of albums of songs that we like that other people have done. But they tend to be songs, I should think the most modern song on it was written in the 80s. But I'm intrigued by the suggestion, believe it or not.
So we can expect to hear some Girls Aloud perhaps in a future gig.
Yeah, or maybe a Britney Spears track.
So, the lineup, like you said, sees you performing with both lead singers from the days of Manfred Mann, with Paul Jones and Mike Darbo. And it's difficult to really see the day when Genesis will play with Peter Gabriel and Phil Collins. So this really is a unique opportunity for people to be able to sample the full breadth of vocal talent that the band had during the 60s. So when the two singers are in the same band, is there any friendly rivalry between the two as to who is the best singer or the most popular?
No, I don't think there's any rivalry at all between them. In fact, Michael Darbo, he often says on stage, you know, what a great pleasure it is, because, you know, he used to buy records of us with Paul, but he never thought he'd be sharing the same stage with him, or actually taking over from him in the 60s. So, no, I don't think there's rivalry at all. I think there's a sort of... I think there's a comradeship about it. More, you know, rivalry doesn't come into it. Rivalry is what happens when you're sort of the young bull. But, you know, when you're the old bull, you take your time, and it's much more friendly. I could tell you a sort of rather... No, I won't tell you that joke about the young bull and the old bull.
Probably not. It's a family audience.
It's a family audience. It's not the time of night for that. It's really not that sort of bad a joke. But no, perhaps not the moment, Andy.
So what reaction have you had so far to the tour?
Oh, we've done about four or five of these Maximum R&B tours now. There's a company called Flying Music who set them up. And I suspect that this is the... Well, for me, it's been the most fun. because of Maggie and Chris as our guests. Not that the other guests weren't fun, but, you know, this one just seems to have clicked really well. I mean, we're accompanying them, but, you know, Maggie does a duet with Mike Darbo, Chris does a duet with Maggie. It's really sort of grown quite organically and very quickly. You know, we only got together for a couple of days rehearsal before we set out on the road, and it sort of happened as we've gone along. I think it's the best of these tours we've ever done.
Excellent. I mean, it certainly sounds like a brilliant gig.
You know, well, it is. I mean, there are so many hits there. And we actually have to leave hits out. We only do, you know, I think we had about 15, 16 top 20 hits with Man for a Man. And we have to leave out four or five of them just to fit everything in. Mm. And it still lasts 2.5 hours or so.
So, value for money as well.
I hope so. So you make us sound like Lidl's or something like that. Super no, Save.
Definitely not.
The Pound Shop.
So, like you said, you've recorded a couple of albums in recent years, but you said they'd been met with indifference from the music industry. So can we expect to see, perhaps, like with the suggestion, perhaps the hits of Girls Aloud from the Manfreds?
Andy, you can suggest away, but we're so busy all the time that finding time to record is the most difficult thing in the schedule. Mm. You know, we do a lot of gigs, plus we all have other interests, musical things that we do. You know, Paul Jones, Rob Townsend, our drummer, who is from Family, and Paul Jones, Rob and myself, we have another band called The Blues Band, which just plays blues, and we do 60 to 80 gigs a year. So, you know, fitting everything together is
So how many months of the year are you actually on the road for?
We don't do it by months, really. I mean, it's more like Bob Dylan. You know, we're touring all the time. Mm. I will do about 140 gigs a year, and then Paul does some duo blues dates with Dave Kelly from the Blues Band. That'll bring him up to 160, plus he does gospel dates with his wife. So, you know, Paul probably does 200 by the end of the year. So it's a never-ending pleasure, actually. Don't tell the promoters, but I'd do this if I wasn't getting paid. You know, really, it's such fun to make music with friends and with people you like and people who are talented, you know. And but as I say, don't tell the promoters.
Just out of interest, you mentioned what it was like working with a bunch of very talented musicians. What's your opinion on today's chart acts? And are there any performers you actually listen to from today's?
Andy, you're asking the wrong man. I never listened to pop radio at all. I sort of gave up some years ago. I think there is some tremendous musicianship around. And I think there's a lot of good singers. And we began things in the 60s in England, but all the way along the line, you know, the actual musicianship has just been improving, because they learn from what we've done, what we did right, what were our mistakes. What I find missing is songwriting of the quality of, you know, the Beatles or Paul Simon or Gallagher and Lyle or whoever you want to choose. I don't think there, from the little I do hear of popular radio, there just don't seem to be the great songwriter. There are great producers, there are great productions being made, but it's very difficult to know whether anyone is really doing it anymore, because, you know, you can sing a whole song out of tune and put it through a computer, and it sounds wonderfully in tune. I don't hear anyone who sounds as good to me as the Beatles, Dylan, Aretha Franklin, Otis Redding, B.B. King, but I think that's the inevitable product of getting older and having lived with such a lot of music. Each person comes into music and they learn and they live with the music, and then they don't hear much new after a while. I think it's the same with films. I go and see a lot of films. I love film. I've loved film since, you know, I was taken to my first film when I was probably 3 years old in my mother's arms. And I've loved film ever since. But I go and see a film that a critic will rave about, and then I realize the critic is 22 years old and he hasn't seen an awful lot. And I look at it and I think, it's pretty good, but it's not as good as, and I think of a list of films like that, you know. And I feel like that about music. It's just the inevitable. I don't want to sound sort of jaded and old. I get recommended to listen to things, and I put it on, and I think, it's not as good as James Taylor. It's not as good as Aretha, you know, whatever genre it's in. So it's difficult to be knocked out. I would love to be knocked out. I would love for something to come along that is as world-changing as the Beatles or Bob Dylan, and that I could enjoy it and think, that is fantastic, that is wonderful.